it just happened. It just flash floods and whitewater rafting don't mix, okay? Yeah, when I told Pastor Lynn, or asked Pastor Lynn if I could come in December or this weekend, he was like, yes, but I don't have any like life-threatening situations I can put you in. I don't know if Tom's going to permit it this time. Okay, good. And then I decided to take the scenic route from Denver and ended up on some icy road somewhere in some town in the middle of there. Yampa, that area. What's the name? The P-town? Flipsburg, turn left, end up on a hill, and there was all the snow and ice, but it was all good. I love coming. I say this every year, and I will continue to say this as long as Lynn allows me to come. So this is always, almost, I think every year, has become my last trip of the year of travel for what I do. And because it's a retreat for me, because I fly into Denver, and then I just drive through the mountains and just kind of decompress with the Lord and just the year and just, you know, just spend time. There's no cell phone service and, you know, a couple hours of it. So I'm just like, okay, Lord, it's just me and you now, you know. And then the train that stopped right in the middle of the street for 30 extra minutes. So we just sat there, me and the Lord. It's like, okay, Lord, what do I do? But, man, I love coming up here. And Lynn's become a friend, more than just a partner in ministry with the journey. He's just become a friend. And whenever you do have a near-death experience with one another, you do become closer, for sure. That definitely bonded us after I got over the almost killed 17 pastors in a whitewater rafting trip. We have not been whitewater rafting since then, just so you know, with a group of pastors in the Dominican Republic. Man, I love this church. On behalf of Mission of Hope and a lot of moms and dads and grandmas and grandpas and aunts and uncles and children in Haiti and the Dominican Republic who cannot tell you thank you on their own, I just somewhat stand in on their behalf. I'm just saying thank you for your, you know, monthly and annual partnership that you do with us, you provide for us, your giving that Pastor Lynn and others have talked about supports the ministry that we do. And so just want to say thank you. You know, there's stories that we'll never know because of the impact that your dollars, you know, and time praying for the people, you know, and I know Pastor Leonard and I are even talking about trips in the future, like what that impact is, we won't ever fully know, but the Lord knows. And He knows that a church up here in Craig, Colorado, being faithful in giving to their local church and that local church being faithful to partner, not just with us as missionaries, but other mission orgs, either locally or globally, you're making a gospel impact. And so I just stand in the gap and say thank you. Of course, I'm going to give you a little bit of report. Before I do that, you know, I got to get something out of the way that kind of was driving me crazy this morning after I sat down in the seat and I saw an image on the screen. You have an elder candidate that I don't know which one it is that I have a lot of questions for because he's wearing a Texas A&M hat. You should ask him. I don't know where he is. Are you here? Is he here this morning? He's in the back. You and I need to have a one-on-one conversation, man. All right. I hear you're tall. I can get under you, and so we can fight it out and see what happens. I'm pretty sure an A&M fan is disqualified from everything in life. Just say. I'm a Razorback, so I have nothing to root for. So, but you for sure don't. Anyways, going on, moving on. I would say I'm sorry, but I'm not. So I'm just going to move on into what we're here for. Did you go to A&M? Oh my God. Everybody should go ask this brother about integrity when he's done, okay? So here we go. I hope your spiritual integrity is better than your football integrity. Just saying. Yeah, never been to. Okay. Thank you. All right, moving on. So I want to give you just a quick, I'm going to give you some stats at the beginning, but I know that stats are stats, right? But they do, every stat gives, it is a story. And really a part of it is like, I just want you to know the impact that, you know, partner churches like you and other churches across North America and individuals that partner with us, it allows us to make the impact that we do. And it's not even us, it's the Lord bringing us all together in one way or another. You and I didn't know each other until about 4 years ago, and some of us were just meeting today. Some of you have taken me on adventures on snowmobile rides and out four-wheeler riding and, you know, in other places. And we've done those things. But the reality is, like, man, we're in this together. This gospel call, this gospel mission, you and I are in this together. And so I just want to give you some statistics for the year, right? So they're on the screen behind me. This year, Mission of Hope, now this was this 20 million meal mark was in November. So we're halfway through December. So we're probably closer to 21 to 22 million meals distributed this year. And so I want you to hear this. It's not just about the meals for us. For those of you that don't know us, it is about utilizing the meal to share the gospel. That's how we do this. And so we're now moved our porting area to Cap Haitien. I'm not going to get into all the micro details of everything, but Port-au-Prince is still very locked down in Haiti. And so we've moved a lot of our shipping into Cap Haitien, doing it that route. And by doing so, we now have 7 warehouses across the country of Haiti that become our distribution points. And those go out to local churches. And the churches and the schools are where the meals get distributed. Here's what you can know about this. So one of the things as an organization, like you'll see 850 plus known salvations. We don't know how many thousands of people have met Jesus through the local churches and local distribution points, because that's their ministry. We just want to be the in-between. But we want to make sure that every place that we do distribution, they know how to share the gospel well. And so that's where our training comes in. But I just want you to know that, man, because of your partnership, Mission of Hope has been able to provide over 20 million meals this year just in the country of Haiti alone. That is... it's heroic Haitian staff members that are quite literally putting their lives on the line. I don't have time to go into all that, but I mean, you can just search Haiti violence and you'll have articles for days to read. And you can know that there's Haitians out there right now that are sharing the good news by sharing good food. And it's just happening over and over and over. Tomorrow, 135,000 meals will go out on a truck. The next day, it'll be another 135,000 meals every day. Sunday's the only day they don't work. And so you can know that's happening. This year in the Dominican Republic and in Haiti, we've seen 11,000 patients in mobile medical clinics. So, I mean, that's a piece of it. 1,800. So what I do, I'm director of Hope Go. So I oversee all short-term missions. So think of mission groups, mission teams, churches, medical groups, business owners, the group of men, group of ladies. They come down, they'll spend a week with us. I oversee the process and program of what ministry are they going to be doing, and also oversee our internship program. But we've had 1,800 people this calendar year come through the Dominican Republic alone to say, hey, we'll put our yes on the table to go and serve. What I tell people all the time, and I've said this here before too, I think I say it everywhere I go, we love for people to come on mission. That's literally my job, is to get people to go on global mission. But I really don't like whenever I hear they came on global mission, but they're not doing local mission. I don't like whenever we fly over our neighbors and go to the nations. I'd rather be both and, not either or. And if you have to choose one, stay local. God placed you here on reason. But if you have the opportunity to go, let's do both. Let's do both. We're going to talk more about that later. We have 5,000 kids in our school system. Normally it's around 16,000 kids. So here's what's happening with the violence in Haiti. Schools are closed. We're one of the few school systems that actually our school programs are back up. And we utilize our school systems because of the gospel. That's what we do. We're going to get to that picture in just a second. We know that we've impacted over 400,000 lives in this last year. It's because of churches like The Journey and others saying yes, that we can empower our staff to do that. And so not just the moms and the dads and others that are local to Haiti or Dominican Republic, but as a staff member at Mission Hope, as somebody who's considered a missionary, as somebody who loves to just take the gospel everywhere that I can, you quite literally are the fuel to the fire. And so thank you. Thank you for being willing to partner and continue to partner and pray and ask questions and say, man, how can we help more? I'm so, so thankful for that. This picture behind me is actually right on the border of Haiti and Dominican Republic. And so right now, Haitians are trying to leave Haiti because of all the chaos that's happening. Meanwhile, Dominican Republic is trying to lock down their country because they don't want all these Haitians coming over. And so what's happening is the Dominican government has basically created a new mandate where they are deporting 10,000 Haitians a week. That's the goal. And they go through different communities, and it's not a humane system that they utilize. I mean, they literally put them in the bed of a truck, take them to a holding center. They're there for 3 to 5 days, no food, just a cup of water a day, and then they take them to the border and just drop them off and say, good luck to you. Some of these are kids. They don't even know Creole. They don't have any family left in Haiti. They have nothing. And so the Haitian government, what's left of it, they called us and said, hey, could you come help? We're quite literally the only organization right now on the border providing meals, tents, and helping make plans on what steps that they need to take next. And so we've moved about 75 of our full-time staff members, and they're there on the border 24 hours a day as trucks, waves and waves and waves of trucks come in. Because the reality is this, like, if those kids and young adults, if they come over, if somebody's not there to stand in the gap and say, hey, let me help you, let me tell you about hope, let me give you a path, a direction, here's places that are safe, here's where you can go, the reality is they're probably going to end up in Port-au-Prince and in a gang, because those gangs are the only place that you can find food, you can find money at this point. And so we're standing in the gap, keeping people that are coming from Dominican Republic back over to Haiti because of deportation. We're the ones standing in the gap. And so God just orchestrated years and years ago for us to have a long-term partnership and a long-term stand in Haiti, to where now we get to respond to crisis that the government calls us in for. Which is the same true for natural disasters. This is just a humanitarian disaster. It's just not made by, or this is man-made, not nature-made, right? And so that's the first thing we get to do. We get to stand in those gaps. One of the things that with food distribution, we have a boat. We have a ship. I think I've called it out before. This is looking at an area called Cap-Haitien, or actually Labadie. So if you've ever been on a cruise, some of you may have ported in an area called Labadie. Shocker, you may have not known this, but you went to Haiti. They just don't call it that. They call it Labadie. And so you show up there. So we have a boat. Here's a different picture of it. This is our boat, right? True North, 110-foot ship. It can sleep 40. You don't want to sleep 40 in there. I've done it. Whew, that's a lot of people in that boat, right? But we have reconfigured it to where we can fit a full container's worth of food, which is it's based on weight, not necessarily on amount, but it's about 280,000 meals. And so we've moved that to Cap-Haitien. We're parked right next to Carnival Cruise Line, Royal Caribbean. We really bring up the property value, right? And so we show up, our boat's sitting there, and we've got Haitians loading food in there. And then Haiti is shaped like this. The southern finger is completely cut off from all humanitarian aid because of gangs. They can't get down there because they can't take the roads because they're all shut down. We have a boat. We've been trying to sell it for a year and a half. We're like, God, why won't you sell this boat? Like, we're pleading with you to sell this boat, and it just didn't happen. We'd had some people come look at it, and they were like, we're good. We're like, dude, give us $50, we'll take it, right? Just get it off our books and our insurance, and more so our dock fee, right? That's what we need to get rid of. And we're sitting there, and it just didn't sell. Like, okay, well, we've got this disaster, and then we start learning more about what's happening on the southern finger of Haiti. And so we are the only organization right now that can reach that area. And so we load up in Cap-Haitien. It's an 8-hour for us because our boat's really slow. It's an 8-hour sail to get down there. And then we have another port there that we have Haitians that we've employed, full-time Haitians, that will take the food off the ship and go distribute it. And we do it every other week. And so God is just blowing our minds how he's doing all the things he's done, and how you can look back and see how God has orchestrated partnerships and friendships and opportunities and tools that we were like, we just need to get rid of it. And God's like, not yet. Hang on. You never know what God's doing in the background of your life. You just don't know. And then eventually you look back and you're like, oh, there it is. And we feel that so much right now in Haiti. I mean, I could go through staff member after staff member of stories, but I do have to share one story. Over the last 12, 14 months, we've been asked by the UN, United Nations, to be the representation for Haiti. And so Ruben on left, he's our church advancement director. He actually lives in Oklahoma now, but he was in the earthquake in 2010. He was the only person in his class, in his college class, that survived. And he came out. He came on staff with us. He's now married to our vice president's daughter. And Ruben Sania is an amazing. He's also now in the Air Force, the United States Air Force, and he's going into SEER school. Incredible, incredible young man. And the guy to the right is Josh Hodges. He is our director of what's called Haiti One, which is another segment of Mission of Hope. They got invited to go to Rome to speak at the United Nations on behalf of the people of Haiti. Food security, physical security. And we're like, why did you ask us? And they said, we can't describe how you're getting done what you do. And we want to learn from you. So Reuben stands up and starts sharing the gospel to the UN Assembly. That's pretty cool, right? So Reuben gets up and he says, it's because Jesus Christ saved me. And I grew up in local churches and I know all the local pastors and they are the lights in their communities. And we do everything through the local church because the reality is they are the answer because they carry the answer, Jesus, on their doors and in their hearts everywhere they go. You're trying to do everything based on programs and processes where really you just need to go find the church. You need to find Jesus. And the UN Assembly's like, why did we invite this guy, right? But now it's an ongoing conversation where now they're beginning to say, hey, how can we send food to you guys for you to be the distribution points? How can we send more medical supplies to you guys for you to be the practitioners? I mean, God is just doing stuff that just, it's hard to describe other than just sit back and say, God, thank you. Thank you that you haven't forgotten the people of Haiti. Thank you that you haven't forgotten them. It's a fascinating thing. You know, and then, I mean, in the Dominican Republic, I believe the next picture, so 3 years ago, 2 years ago, we had a staff of four. And they were all North Americans to where now we have 52 full-time employees, 44 of them being Dominican or Haitian. Like, the way that God is growing, because the goal is not for the Americans to go down and fix it. We have that mentality, right? The goal is not for us to go down and fix it. The goal is not for us to go down, everything to be dependent upon us. We want to empower the locals to reach the locals. And so now we have a Dominican country director. We have Haitians that are leading our kids' clubs. I mean, we have a Haitian and a Dominican lady that are both leading our women's empowerment initiatives. I mean, it's just mind-boggling what God is bringing. And we're not even like sending out posts. Like, we're looking to hire. They're coming to us. There's a pastor named Pastor Andre that he just shows up on campus one day and he says, man, I was walking down the street and God told me to turn to the left and I saw your sign. What are you guys? And now he's become one of our greatest partners in the community where he's planting churches and we get to go do that with him. I mean, God just keeps doing it. He just keeps doing it. We do pastor training. This is one of our favorite things to do because the pastors of the local churches, we believe, are the answers. The gospel is the answer, but we want to do it through the local church, right? And so we do this pastor training once a month where we'll have 100 to 150 pastors from the areas. We'll bus them in, we'll bring them in, they'll come, and they'll stay for, you think church for an hour, and I don't know, Lynn didn't really give me a time, so we'll just make up a time. We'll say, 3 hours today. for Texas A&M, that's, you got to do the math to get there, okay? So, but like, the reality is this, like, they'll come to training for 12 to 14 hours, and it's like sponges. And they'll go out and they just go and take it to their people. It's amazing the discipleship we're seeing by this pastor training. We do medical clinics, and I mentioned that earlier, there's 11,000 medical clinics. So we employ local doctors. We have one full-time doctor on our staff, and then a former NICU nurse who's his assistant. And then we partner with the Ministry of Health, but then also with up to 10 other local doctors because we want them to be the ones in the community, and we support what they do. I mean, it would be like, basically a pastor, Pastor Lynn, say, hey, let me equip you guys to do the work of the ministry. That's what he does, and I know he does that well. That's what we want to do in the Dominican Republic. We want, in Haiti, we want to be equippers of locals to go reach the locals. The only way we do that is to say, hey, come be alongside us. And so medical clinics, then we have teams. I already mentioned that, so I'm not going to spend a long time, but this is just too many kids for me. That scares me. So before I get started on the message, that lady right in the middle, I got to tell you about her. She got a blue shirt on. There's a sign right behind her head. Her name is Milka, M-I-L-C-A. So a couple weeks ago, I was preaching at Concordia University. It's a Christian college in Austin, Texas. They bring mission teams down with us. And they asked me to come in for their last chapel of the semester and preach on missional living. I mean, I guess because I work in mission organization, that's the only thing I'm qualified to preach on. I don't know. But I went in and I was preaching. And as I was preaching, I heard something in my mouth. Click. And then I felt something and I realized I had broken one of my wisdom tooth right here broke while I was preaching. I didn't know what to do, y'all. Like, if I would have, you know, if I was smart, I would have been like, hey, hang on just a second, turn around, and like, got the tooth out. No, y'all, like, I was in the middle, like, driving home, like, the gospel, like, take the gospel, you've heard. And I was like, and I just swallowed it. So I didn't know what else to do, right? So I just swallowed my tooth, and I was like, oh. I just kept going. The people at Concordia never knew. They thought I, like, choked on something. I did. But they didn't know, like, what was happening. So Milka, in the blue, is a dentist in the Dominican Republic. So I was preaching on Monday. I was going to the DR on Tuesday. So I just called Milka. I was like, hey, Milka, I have a problem. My dentist can't get me in. Can you see me tomorrow? She was like, yeah, sure, come on in. Had to get an x-ray. It was $7.75. Right? She cleaned my teeth, and she said, how did this happen, TJ? So I told her what happened. I had to wait 30 minutes for her to stop laughing at me. Right? And so, if you want to know, if you ever need a wisdom tooth extracted, you can go to the Dominican Republic and get it done for $75, just so you know. But Milka, so she's a dentist, obviously. She's not just some random person. It's like, yeah, Milka, can you? So Milka is part of the Abad family. The Abad family is one of our greatest partnerships that we've found in the Dominican Republic. Magdalena Abad, the mom, grew up Catholic. She met Jesus and began basically just planting churches. She didn't know what she was doing. She's like, I just want to tell people about what God's done to me. Churches started popping up. Now they own the local hospital that we have a partnership with. If we need new surgeries, we go to the hospital. If we need a medical team person, or if we need help, like, we go to the hospital. But what we're seeing happening is God is taking a private practice medical clinic and a ministry, merging the two together to where now we have a full-time chaplain, multiple full-time chaplains that work at the hospital, and they're sharing the gospel with every patient that comes through. Like, it's just different how God wires people in different ways and places people at different times, rescues people at different times, all with a common mission, and that's to reach the world for Jesus. That includes Craig, Colorado. That includes here. And the other little small towns that I drove through on the way here. And the people that you know that don't live here, like, it includes all of them. This morning, for the next, you know, hour and a half / 20 minutes, I want to talk about living alive. I believe that Jesus came to give us life so that we could actually be alive while we're living. I think that oftentimes, I think Christians should be the most joyful, happy people on the planet. Even in the midst of sorrow, there's still joy, the candle, right? There's still joy. Jesus still came no matter what we are facing. Many of you know I lost my dad a few years ago, and it rocked me. You know that. I lost my sister this past August, and man, that was hard. But here's the reality. Like, because of what I've seen in God's restoration of joy and giving us an opportunity to live alive, I want to challenge you, my friends and extended family here in Craig, Colorado, to be a life that is living alive. We know John 10:10. Right? You've heard it. It's probably on a sign somewhere around the church. If not, it's probably at one of your houses. You picked it up somewhere. And we know the verse, right? It's the thief comes only to steal, kill, and destroy. I have come to give it life and to give it abundant, right? Or to have it to the full. The question is, what is that? What is this full life that Jesus, by the way, this is a passage that's talking about Jesus being the great shepherd. Like, what's happening right here? What is this full life? It's not about the stuff that we get, but it's who we get. We can go and get stuff. That stuff fades and wears out and leaves us needing more. Jesus constantly fills us with himself by the power of the Holy Spirit. Like, we can live alive because we know that He has come to give it to you. And He gives it abundantly. He gives it to the full. Like, in the midst, and I met with Pastor Lynn last night, or we had dinner, and I said, "How are you doing, Pastor?" He goes, "Man, it's just been a hard season. There's been a lot happening in our community." And he kind of downloaded what's been happening. Man, tragedy is hard. Death is hard. Suffering is hard because it's not natural to the human spirit, because we weren't supposed to experience death. Sin brought death into our world. And so it's not natural for us. And so whenever we talk about this full life, when we talk about death, like, how do these two be in the same place? It's because in the sorrow, in the grief, we can know that we can have a peace and a shepherd that leads us back to His joy every single time. It's rooted in you. Like, you and I have this available to us. It's not what you get, although those things can bring you a temporary satisfaction, and sometimes they do fulfill a need that you have. The reality is there is only a one eternal joy. That's Jesus. That's it. The Good Shepherd. I'm not going to preach it again, because you know that I would. I preached Psalm 23 last year, and like, man, if you need a definition of what the Good Shepherd does, you can read John 10:10, John 10:11 and 12, and then go back to Psalm 23 and just see what the Shepherd does for you every day. Just go read it. But I want us to have practical thoughts. Like, I don't want things to be theory. Like, what? Yeah, okay, great, TJ, joy, that sounds great. That gives me the warm fuzzies. No, I know we need warm fuzzies. I do, because it's cold outside for me, not for y'all. You're in shorts and T-shirts, right? I get it. You're like, this is still summertime for us. I want to give practical thought to this. I love Acts chapter 4. I love this story. And just a quick backstory. So we know that there's these two characters, Peter and John. Peter is the one that said, "Jesus, I'll give my life for you." He cuts off Malchus's ear. Jesus takes it, puts it back on, and he's like, I'll do anything for you." Then we get to the moment of crucifixion, or the moment of trial, and we know Peter denied Jesus three times. Right? Like, he was so tough until adversity hit, and then his integrity took a real hit, because it's like, oh gosh, he was actually a liar. He's actually full of fear. Right? We have John at the crucifixion. He runs. Like, he runs away. He's gone. Right? What do? They go back fishing. They go back to their trades. Then they get restored. The day of Pentecost comes. The Holy Spirit comes. And Peter stands up and leads thousands upon thousands upon thousands to Jesus. Right? Or, yeah, to Jesus. Like, he does this thing. Then you get into Acts chapter 3. We get to this place where they're walking down the streets and you have a lame man who can't walk, he can't move, he can't function, he can't get a job, he can't fulfill anything in society at that point. Like, that's what was going on. And he said, can you give me money? And they said, man, we don't have anything, but what we do have is better. And they call on Jesus, and he heals this guy. And he stands up, and he walks, and he leaps, and he runs, and he goes and tells people, right? He does the thing. The religious elite did not like this. And so they arrest them. Right? They put him on trial and they ask, by what power or by what name are you doing this? That's an important question. By what power or by what name are you living? By what power or what name am I living? Is it because I want TJ's name to be great, or I want Jesus? Are you living on your own power? Like, oh, I can get this done. Or, God, would you help me with this? Would you entrust me with this? Would you empower me to do these things? Would you empower me? Would you trust me, or would you empower me? Would you give me the strength to love my wife or to love my husband well? Would you help me parent my prodigal child? Would you help me with my brother or my sister that is sick? Would you help me in my job, Lord? I don't know what's coming in the next few years. Lord, this kid in my class at school, like, what do I do with that child who's coming from a broken family? Lord, my parents are splitting. Like, we have all these scenarios. What if the Lord has placed you in a certain position at a certain time, because it's not an accident, it's on purpose with a purpose. What if he actually placed you at that point in this moment in time for you to be like Peter and John in this story? I don't have a lot, but what I can give you is better. I can give you Jesus. So they put him on trial, and then we get to Acts chapter 4, verse 13. I love this. This is after Peter shares the gospel, and they're like, man, these guys are crazy. Verse 13, because here's the reality. We're like, we look at these Bible characters in our scriptural reading, and we're like, I mean, I'm not Peter. How could I be Peter? Like, what a hero. I grew up on a cattle ranch. I can't be Paul. Like, I didn't have a Damascus Road experience. I wasn't Saul. Now, Paul, I've been TJ my whole life. You know, I fix fences. I mean, it's the reality. Like, we look at these characters like, man, those stories are amazing. I'm not any of those guys. Acts chapter 4, verse 13. And when they saw, gosh, I love this. And when they saw the courage of Peter and John, they realized that they were unschooled, ordinary men. And they were astonished, and they took note that these men had been with Jesus. You guys were really loud earlier when you're talking about other things. You should be really loud in that moment right there. That they had been with Jesus. These were uncommon, or these were common, ordinary, unschooled, unassuming, not wildly popular. These were just, they were like, these guys aren't the religious elite. They haven't been through all the theological schools. They haven't been through the training. They're not rabbis. They're not political figures. They don't have a lot. They literally just said they don't have money. How are they doing all this? They noted that they had been with Jesus. Okay, so missional living, because that's what I'm qualified to preach on. How do you live a missional life? How do you live on mission every day? Now, I'm not going to stand up here and claim that I'm perfect. TJ is missional every day. Guys, there's some days I'm just like, I just want to be at home and just watch football all day. You know, there's some days I'm like, I just want to mow my yard. Because in ministry and a lot of just other jobs as well, I know this. I know Lynn can speak to this, and some of you could too. Like in ministry, you don't ever really see the finished product. You feel like you just keep going and keep going and keep going and keep going. And it's like, am I doing anything? So I love to mow my yard because I can see it's done, right? So sometimes I don't hire anybody to do my yard. I do my yard. I have lines in my yard. I'm not going to get on that. There's a whole OCD part of me in that. They have to be straight. Okay, stop. Have to be. It's okay. I want you to hear this. I want to take the pressure cooker off of you feeling like to be an impactful person in the kingdom that you have to be a Peter, a John, or a Paul. To be impactful for the kingdom, people just need to know that you've been with Jesus. That's it. Let's not overcomplicate this. Yes, I love discipleship programs. I love process. Like I live in a process cooker. I build processes for ministry. I love creating programs that push people further. But at the end, at the beginning and at the end of the day, I just want people to know and see that I've been with Jesus. The people of Craig, Colorado, and Hayden, Colorado, and all the other towns surrounding here, and all the places many of you will go over Christmas, you know what they need to know? They don't need to know if you've got the finances to buy them gifts. They don't need to know what job you have. They need to know that you've been with Jesus. Our country and our world is looking for hope. And if you want to live a life as an ordinary person, because by the way, it's perfectly fine to be ordinary. I want you to hear that. If you want to live a life as an ordinary person that is astonishing to the common man beside you, go be with Jesus. Go surrender your life to Jesus. Go find Jesus. Get in your scripture, read about Jesus. I hope that He takes you on a journey like He did me, where I've been reading the same passage for 2.5 years. Maybe it's one verse for you. Maybe you need to pray one time this week because you haven't prayed in a year. Go spend time with Jesus. It could probably become, it's interesting, like people that live at the beach go to the mountains, and people that go to the mountains go to the beach, right? Because you just see the mountains every day. So it's odd whenever this guy stands up here and is like, your mountains are beautiful. You're like, oh yeah, I guess they are, aren't they? Or you come down to my flat land where I live, you're like, this is beautiful. You got cactus. I'm like, this is the worst. Right? Like, it's just flat. Like, get out and go find God somewhere. Go spend time with Jesus so that whenever you're by your spouse can know that when she or he encounters you, they've also encountered the Lord. Whenever your kids interact with you, they know that they have encountered one that's been with the Lord. When your coworkers encounter you, whenever you sit down in that meeting that's going to be tense, man, what if we just saw the job as the platform for the gospel instead of the job that feeds things? I call my kids things. I got to feed you things again, right? Like, what if everything that we do became an outflow of us spending time with Jesus instead of a distraction from it? They had been with Jesus. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 9. I'm going to go quick here and then we'll wrap it up. Remember I told you it's okay to be ordinary? I can tell you that because I can give you this verse. I can give you this and say, hey, just like Peter, just like Paul, just like John, just like Luke and Matthew, like all those biblical heroes that we know, Moses, Noah, all those biblical heroes, like, oh, I can't be them. Okay, let me bring us all into the family. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 9. But you, this is Peter telling the Gentiles, you also are part of this. By the way, that's us. We've been grafted into the family of God, right? Like, but you are a chosen people. That's you. Have you considered today or yesterday? Probably today because you're at church. What about yesterday? Did you consider at any moment yesterday that Jesus chose you when he chose the cross? Mind-boggling to me. I know me. There are days I don't even want to choose me. But God did. You, my spiritual family here at The Journey, beautiful Craig, Colorado, you're chosen. It's not like God has forgotten you up here, by the way. Like, it's not like, you know, it's like TJ, and this is the Lord. TJ, I made him 5'9" tall and 5'9" wide. What did I do with him? What did I do? Like, where did he go? Now, he knows exactly where I am. He knows exactly what I'm facing. He knows exactly what I'm going through. And he says, I choose you. That story is true for you also. You want joy? This joy, the joy of Jesus in your life? Begin to consider that you're chosen. It's not just a theory, it's a fact. You are part of the royal priesthood. This section is called the priesthood of the believers. Like, all of you are now part of royalty, and every member is a minister. It's not just Pastor Lynn and his support staff. They're not the only ones in ministry. It's not just the elder board. Like, no, it's you. Every member, every Christian is also a minister. You have been brought in to go and just say, man, I've been with Jesus. Can I tell you about that? Because it changed my life. Absolutely changed. I had a brother this morning in Sunday school. I got to hang out with the Sunday school. And he said, man, this is how Jesus changed my life. And it's just like, that's your story. Just tell it. Tell the story. You are chosen, you are part of the royal priesthood, you are a holy nation. I mean, like, we are brought in. Galatians 3:28, it's not on the screen, it says, there's neither Jew nor Greek, there's neither slave nor free, there is no male or female, for you are all one in Christ. He's like, you and I are family. The beautiful thing is, and yes, I have to reference Psalm 23 because I can't get by it. We get to invite people to the table. No matter what their background is, because here's the reality. Every person in this room, I'm gonna blow everybody's minds real quick. All of you are going to act really shocked when I say this. Every one of you in this room are facing something. What? Yeah, the person sitting next to you, you don't know what they're going through. Invite them to the table and say, man, let's talk. You don't know what the person at Walmart that you go grocery shopping this afternoon, not on a Sunday afternoon, y'all, that's a bad idea, but go grocery shopping at some point. Like, the people that work at Walmart, like, they need to know that somebody's inviting them to the table and that they can be part of your family, this family, this spiritual family. Like, we have this opportunity. And what's the difference between Peter and John in Acts chapter 4 than it was in the beginning? Now they have the Holy Spirit indwelling within them, empowering them, being sent out. You have the same power within you. That's how they can talk with such authority. And what are they saying? I don't have a lot, but I have Jesus. You know what? You probably don't have a lot either. I don't. But what do you have? You have Jesus. So go and share that, because you are chosen. You are royal. You're part of the priesthood. You are part of a holy nation. You're God's possession. People don't like that when I say that. I don't want to be possessed by God. Why wouldn't you be? Like, think about this. The Creator knows the created way better than the created thinks they know themselves. Like, oh man, I really know myself. No, you don't. Now, I know that there's some people in this room that are way smarter than me. It wouldn't take much, right? I'm not worried about the Aggie in the back. I'm not worried about that one. But the rest, I'm sorry, brother, you wore the hat. That's on you, right? Not on me. Right? Like, here's the reality. Like, I know that there are people in this room that can answer this question. I can't, though. Like, how are we so intricately made that our entire body functions in a system, a closed system? Like in motors, you have to continue to add oil, at least in my old truck you do, right? You have to keep checking the filters. Like, you have to keep doing those things. In reality, like, our body is a closed system to where when we take care of it, it functions perfectly, and it drives us through life. Our legs work, our back works, everything works. Like, God created all that. Now, I just wonder how many of you could tell me what your proper levels in your blood should be. But I know you could. Okay. I know that. There's a few of you that can, right? But then if I ask you, how does a motor work? You're like, I have no idea. Like, there's this reality where we think we know so much, but then whenever we try to dive down into the micro level, like the granular level of how we function, we cannot do it. At some point, you say, it has to be God. It has to be God. And He's the only one that can take every single one of us and all 8 billion people on the planet currently, let's not even think about the billions that have passed before who will live after the Lord, if the Lord wills it, right? Like, so, like, every one of us have a specific fingerprint. Every one of you. I've burned 3 of mine off, so I only have 7. Right? Like, the reality is, like, we're all different, but we're all very unique, and we're all His very special possession. You were bought. You were restored. You were redeemed with a great price. While we were still yet sinners, Christ died for us. Everything about you is on purpose. Everything. Every story matters. Every background matters. Every tomorrow matters. I want to be owned by the Lord. Because the reality is this, man, whenever we finally get to submission, getting under the mission of God, whenever we get to that place, we actually begin to live a life because the pressure cooker is off of us, and we say, Lord, I just want to follow you, whatever that means. I'm in. I just want to be with you, and I want other people to know I've been with you. That's it. That you may proclaim, First Peter 2:9, that you may proclaim of the excellencies of Him who called you out of darkness into His marvelous light. So I'll finish with this illustration, then we'll be done. Some of you have met my bride. She got to come a couple years ago, and I hope she gets to come soon. We're trying to figure out how to get her here this trip. She loves snow and Christmas, and we don't have snow ever where I live. Like, once every, 5 years. Like, snowflake, close everything down. It would completely shut our city down, like, right, what you guys have right now. And it's easy for me to talk about my bride. Started dating in 9th grade. I had a crush on her in 7th grade, 8th grade. 9th grade, we started going out, whatever that meant for you 40-year-olds. Like, what were we even talking about? We don't know, right? And so, we were going out in 9th grade. We dated for 6 years. Only girl I've ever dated. I'm the only guy she's ever dated. We got married before our senior year of college. I don't, and I kind of do recommend that. Sorry, parents. You're like, shut up, TJ, right? And so, we got married for our senior year of college. And we've been married for 22 years. We've got a kid who's just finished up his first semester, a son, Trey, who just finished up his first semester in college. Our daughter is a senior in high school. She's going to be graduating in May, hopefully. You know, she's going to be graduating in May, and she's going to be playing college softball. And so, like, man, like, all those things, right? Like, it's easy for me to talk about my wife because, man, I love her. Like, we have Christmas trees all over our house. We got Christmas trees outside, inside, in every bedroom. Like, she loves Christmas, right? And I love my bride. I do anything for her. Man, I love to talk about her. I love to brag on her. I love, like, when she walks in the room, my heart still flutters. That's legit. Like, she's still the most beautiful woman on the planet to me. Like, I love Melanie. It's so easy for me to talk about her because I spend so much time with her, because we know each other so well. You know, like, she knows how I like my steak. I like it medium rare. She likes her charcoal jerky, right? Like, she's like we know each other in that way. Man, it's so easy for you and I to talk about the things that we love the most and that we're most close with. It's easy for me to talk about how marvelous, right, to use the word in the passage, how marvelous my wife is, but the reality is my wife can't save me. Jesus did. You and I, as ambassadors, as children, as part of the royal priesthood, as part of the holy family, the holy nation, being his possession, here's what we're supposed to do. I told you I'm going to give you something practical. It took a long time to get there because I'm a preacher. That's what we do. If you've been with Jesus, it's simple, right? It's simple. That you may proclaim, that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. You can only understand the darkness whenever you spent time with the one that is light. So go spend time with him. He's worth your time. You may be in this room and you're like, TJ, man, I don't have a relationship with Jesus. I don't know. I know a few of you now over the years, but the majority of you, I don't know. I don't know if this is your first time here. I don't know if you've been coming here since Moses, you know, was young. I don't know. We tell my grandma all the time that she was old when the dirt was new. And so she laughs about it. Some of y'all, A&M, you'll get that later. Okay. I'm so sorry, man. I need to give you a hug or something. Like, hug your stomach because you're so tall. Some of you are in this room, and you're like, TJ, man, I don't have that light. I can't talk about it because I've never known Jesus. Can I just tell you that the day that I surrendered my life to Jesus at 21 years old, everything changed for me. There's been good days. There's been brutal days. But the Lord has been the one that's been consistent all the way through. There's been days when I wanted to give up, that there's no way he'd ever give up on me. And I think there may be days he's like, whoa, dude, back up, chill out. Probably not. But if you're sitting in this room, you don't know Jesus, man, I want to encourage you today. Let's get that settled. He is the reason for this season. He is this reason for Christmas. He is joy. He is peace. He is rest. He is restoration. And he says, come sit at my table. And so, Father, I pray over the people in this room, here at The Journey. God, I love these people so much. It's such a restful place for me. Father, I pray that the Christians in the room, those that are followers of the way, of you, Jesus, I pray that they would draw closer to you than they've ever been in their life during this season. God, that whenever they interact with people in the community and neighborhoods and in workplaces, I pray that people would know there's something different, and they would know it's because they've been with Jesus. God, I pray that restoration takes place in the brokenness of the believers. I know there's several in the room that are hurting from different things that are happening. Everybody's on a journey. Everybody's going through something. If Father, I pray that as they draw close to you, God, your scripture says that you draw close to us. And so, Father, I pray that they would know that you never left and you're walking with them every single step. Father, if there's one or many, maybe it's a young man or an older gentleman, maybe it's a mom or it's a kid in this room, like, yeah, man, I've never surrendered my life to Jesus. Let today be the day that they find hope. Father, I love you. I pray this, Jesus, in your name. Amen.